Welcome to What's Left, a weekly political discussion challenging the mainstream left. I'm Eduardo Barca with co-host, teacher and socialist Andy Lipson, and community organizing socialist Kenny Cepeda. We are online at what-s-left.webno.com. Please subscribe, rate, review, and turn on your notifications. Share your favorite episode wherever you found this episode. Thank you. Let's see. Today, we will be discussing the aftermath of the quote-unquote insurrection of last week.
Are you going to call it an insurrection?
I said quote-unquote.
Oh, okay, yes, yes.
censorship, impeachment, a little bit of, you know, the Iran maybe scare of a war by leaving Trump in office currently for what, until next week or 2 weeks? Just a mixed mash of things that have been happening since last week. Last week we shared, we were having a different episode about our reflections, and that Wednesday, the day of Kings, that was the day that this quote-unquote insurrection happened, or the attack on the Capitol happened. As the mainstream media puts it, and Andy doesn't like the way it sounds. Whatever.
Some media is also using an attempted coup, you know, as a way to refer to the incident.
So we'll discuss after, what do we make of now all that has transpired in such a short time. The weekend has been, there was a migration over to Parler, and then there was a shutting down of Parler. And then there was, Kenny, help me out here. What did you find out? There was a deplatforming, it's the word, of many, many, many platforms. All right, so let's see, what do we make of it? I don't know if anyone else wants to go.
Well, I think we should probably start first. Well, I'll first say that I do think this starts with the word insurrection and coup.
Yeah.
To describe what really was a fairly small demonstration and what amounts to what is fairly clear to me amounts to really a ruling class stage managed affair to make it appear that the Congress was threatened while they were essentially doing an undemocratic election, which is the basis of our of our lack of democracy we have, certifying the electors so they could actually elect the president, since people don't actually do that. Or certifying, the election, I suppose, with the electors. I guess that's the reason, Eduardo, I think I have a trouble, is because that even the word coup and insurrection are the beginnings of the lies to then tell more lies and to then do more policies based on lies, which are going to be used to attack us, even though they seem like they might be going at Trump or Parler or whatever. So I guess I will start there.
I'm in complete agreement. That's why I did say quote unquote in the very beginning. I actually don't know how do I frame what happened? I mean, how do we describe what happened? There was protests
that happened. And I guess I would describe it as a protest that was engineered to produce a U.S. crackdown. Not a crackdown like a civil liberties crackdown at the point of the Capitol, but a crackdown more broadly on the population that we're now seeing corporations go into motion, Wall Street go into motion, and of course the U.S. state go into motion. And that's what we should be we're going to be talking about today, is all these pieces moving to lock in the next, our next future president and our next future regime, and establish how they're going to be ruling over us, while they project power abroad as well. So maybe let me start with the impeachment. And since I've already said, I feel like I've said plenty already, Trump was impeached by the Congress today. And it's going to go to the Senate. I think the basis of what is it? High crimes, misdemeanors. What is the basis of impeachment? High crimes, misdemeanors, bribery, or maybe like what is that
called? Inciting violence.
No, but I'm saying there's three bases you can do for impeachment.
Oh.
And there was another one, like, I think where you, like you betray your country. I think that's the other one. I can't remember what that one is, but I don't know which one of these things are, but they are, yeah, accusing him of inciting violence and inciting the insurrection and the coup.
Incitement to insurrection.
Yes. And so that's the basis of what this impeachment now will move to the Senate. I believe he will be impeached, but I'll stop there, and because I think there's more to be said about why. I guess I would ask you both, and I'll say a bit why this is happening. Why are they moving to impeach Trump? Like, he's going to be gone pretty soon anyway.
I believe that this is an attempt to curb any idea that Trump might have to run in 4 years from now, to strip him of any potential power, to make him the only president that has been impeached in history twice, and to call for a retribution that you should not do this ever. There is a consequence, there is punishment. Should you ever try to attempt, it is a behaving mechanism. It's there to tell people you should not ever try and attempt to do this, because we will go after you. And even Democrats have tried to talk, they've said in the news that anybody who was a part of it should be sought after. And Lindsey Graham came out saying that this is not the time for that, this is time for healing, whatever, right? But that is what I think those three are the reasons why I think the impeachment process is happening for. I'll stop there.
Eduardo, can you say more when you say this? Like, spell out what you mean by this. Like,
that you will not make any attempt to override the power that exists in Congress, in the state that we have currently, in the system that is upheld by all of the capitalist class that's in Congress, all of them. I mean, Nancy Pelosi once said, when she was asked by a student, I think it was in one of the, I don't know, any, some assembly, some hall, she was asked about socialism, and she clearly stated, we are a capitalist country. This is not a socialist country. We are proud capitalists. This is the capitalist class, right? So,
well, I thank you for your question, but I have to say we're capitalist, and that's just the way it is.
She and everyone else is there to uphold the system as it is. And any threat, even if it is from another one of your capitalist class, like Trump, because I do not think he is actually for the people. We have stated that here. And I think people are misguided when they are following him. His followers are unfortunately misguided by thinking of him as some savior. Even if it is within your political class, you know, your capitalist class, you will be made an example of. Even if you are within our capitalist class, you will be taught a lesson. Now imagine, and I was thinking about this last night, or one of these nights that I slept at 3 a.m., I was thinking of our conversation that we were having about socialism, Andy. And I asked you one time, Andy, how do you think it will be possible to have a socialist revolution if you are now tackling in the 21st century with so much technology, with so much military force that is high tech? Again, as I said last week, the group, the protesters to Joe Biden, right, because of Joe Biden's win, those aren't the group that I would align myself with. Those are just not it for me. There are obviously nefarious forces behind those groups that are manipulating this working class. But I did say to you, I didn't say this, but I thought those people went onto the Capitol, and look at how over this is the aftermath episode. Look at how there are like 4,000 now ways to find all these people through face recognitions, through pictures, through surveillance, whatever it is, they're finding them. And whilst I'm not very keen on defending them, because I'm not, it is sort of an example of what could it look like if there was a true insurrection from you socialists, from us supporting the socialists for a better change, a better world, a transformation of the system, which I am very fearful of. I would love to support that revolution train, but I am also very fearful of what's happening. Because as I said on Facebook, when I posted, this isn't just an attack on the right, it'll eventually come to us. So I have fears. I have legitimate fears after what I've seen over the weekend. It will come after us. It will come to bite us. If we allow mega companies align themselves, these neoliberals, with Silicon Valley.
So for me, I still think that, what's happening is not so much about Trump. It's a message to everyone else that's outside the political machinery and, you know, the ruling class machinery. And to a degree, I mean, Trump, I think he found himself in that position as a sort of an outsider, you know, from that class. I do think he became a tool of the system to set us up for where we're at right now. And I think this is like the last act in that utilization of him, you know, like using him for a purpose. Because he, people in the establishment didn't like him. I think that to a degree in the Republican Party, he was an outsider. He was a big fuck you to the establishment people. You know, we've talked about that before, right? But people on the right wing said, you know, we'd rather take this guy who's, you know, a reality TV star and, you know, says it like it is, even if he's wrong. I don't agree with him being wrong, you know, the content of his words, but his approach, you know, and people, because people are tired of the same condescending liberal, you know, words of unity and progress when their lives are being looted away. So the way I see it now is again, they're squeezing the last they can of Trump to set us up, again, for that future where dissent will be persecuted, in whether it's from the right or from the left. And it's not, again, I think this is a coordinated move by the ruling class mafia, and they're throwing one of theirs under the bus. You know, if you read Machiavelli, but it shows their brutality and how, and, you know, and they also see, I don't think it's a message to the world. It's not just the US. A message to the world, just like when we talked about Qasem Soleimani, right, in Iran, yeah. When they were willing to take someone out in another country, and, you know, one of their top generals. And, you know, this too is a message, you know, we're willing to do the dirty work to maintain our supremacy on the world stage. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's the last act. If anything, I don't think we should be focusing on Trump himself. We should be focusing on the coordination of, you know, all these players in the game right now that include, you know, the political class, the Democrats who are very much, you know, tied to the apparatus of the government, the states, the repressive apparatus, the Republicans who want to wash their hands and put some distance between them and Trump. And to kind of like gain back some of the base that they've lost, you know, because the Republicans were losing some legitimacy, you know, to their base, you know, and Trump was that symbol. And so, again, nationalism and you know, that we saw that in 9/11, you know, it's a good tool to kind of, you know, bring people into the fold. And so, again, this is an attempted coup and you know, a threat to our whatever democracy that has never existed. And so by and large, I mean, both the right and the left are united in that American nationalism, you know, sentiment. And so here we are, you know, consumed by this topic. I actually think this is, because like Biden and Kamala, to me, they're right wingers, you know, in blue. And this is the political class, the ruling class of the nation, uniting, or in the world, really, you know, uniting in warning everyone, you know, we're going to rule as in the context of the biggest transfer of wealth of the history of humanity, in the context of the fear mongering of COVID, you know, and so this is just one more element that adds to that sort of dark future, you know, where you better align, you better listen to the state. You better listen, you know, and if you dissent, if you dare to question, you will be erased, basically, because if they can do this to Trump, you know, what can they do to us individuals who are calling for protests? You know, again.
Yeah, I mean, I really agree with both of you about these elements of trying to teach people using Trump as an object lesson. And Angela Merkel came out. I mean, we're going to get to the censorship part of this, but Angela Merkel came out and was like critical of what some of the U.S. response around the censorship of Trump, and AMLO from Mexico was critical. These people are nervous. I know these people are nervous about the kinds of force, the way that the U.S. ruling class moved as a force to wipe this guy off like a stain. And also to take down a pretty big company, Parler, which was competitive, and to watch Amazon, Google, and Apple all just descend upon one corporation and digest it. And then in a hailstorm of like censorship madness, that isn't, we don't know where this is going to really end, honestly. So I agree with that, that characterization. And I think there's two things I would add to it. Is one is that I think being impeaching Trump right now allows them to take all the sins of the capitalist class of the last 4 years. Trump was a piece of that. Pompeo, the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, the Democratic Party establishment, the Republican Party establishment, all of them were involved in the last 4 years and this last year, right? All of them were involved in the stimulus boondoggle, in the coronavirus lockdowns, in all the stuff that people think about is, if you will, maybe just Trump's, but the capitalist class has all their hands in it. Well, guess what they get to do? They all get to basically take all those sins, put it on this one guy, impeach him, send him out, and say, "Oh, now we're clean. You know, we got rid of him. Now you have some people you can trust." So I do think that's a piece of it, is attempting essentially to absolve themselves of the sins of the last 4 years and put them all on this one character and then throw them into the trash. But I also think it is worth remembering the other part of the object lesson that Eduardo's talking about is going back to 2016. I do believe the capitalist class was surprised by the results of 2016. I do believe that they were surprised about this right-wing populist essentially taking power when they had rigged the election that time and it didn't work, as opposed to this rigged election. And this was another rigged election. I would just say it worked this time. And Trump, yeah, you know, and he did all the tweeting. He did all these crazy things. He would say things you weren't supposed to say. He would say, "Yeah, the United States is like," when talking to Russia, he was like, "Well, the United States has its own. We have our own killers here in the United States, just like these guys. How are we supposed to?" You know, he didn't know how to talk, right? And was too open about the way these things are done. He wasn't presidential, and he would in fact. He would actually do the one thing that people are often critical of, like Clinton. And when Clinton and Obama got elected, everyone always thought that after they got elected, those presidents would come back to their people and like check in with them every once in a while and do that. No, they went into a bubble. That wasn't Trump. Trump would continue to go back to his base, continue to have rallies, continue to do things like that. That's a threat, actually. That's a threat to the establishment when you have a person doing that. There's a reason why Obama didn't do that and Clinton didn't do that, even though their base would have wanted them to do that after they were elected, come back and make those rallies and things like that. They only did that during the election season. They didn't do that, you know, the year after they get elected or 2 years after they elected. Only Trump did that. And that's a bit of a threat. That's a very different way for a president to do things, even though he had his own reasons for doing that. So I do think they're basically saying, no effing way. If you think you're going to come in here and do that with this in this country, this is how you're going to get treated. And so I do think there was a lesson to be taught to any future anti-establishment character about what's going to happen to you and how the ruling class will always get their man if they want it. And so you know, now I think there's kind of like a loyalty oath, right? Because I think what we're seeing now is the consolidation of the establishment, like establishment Republicans, obviously neoliberal establishment Democrats, the left wing of the Democratic Party, corporate America, Wall Street, all of them are lining up behind this. In fact, you know, there are corporations that are threatening to pull money away from candidates who don't say, no, this election needs to be certified. And if you don't certify election, we're going to pull the money out. All right. So I believe we are seeing a consolidation of the state, as well as the consolidation of corporate power. And what we're going to see is a greater fusion of that. Ultimately, in an effort to compete with China. And I think the things we're going to see in this country is the two parties are going to look a lot more like one, because they have to take on a party over there in the Chinese Communist Party. And I think they're trying to mirror in forming the U.S. state in conjunction with the corporations, which have had to deal with free market capitalism. We are going to see a system which looks a lot more like state capitalism, which is really what the U.S. looks like when it's gearing up for war. And so I do think we're going to see more and more the consolidation of the state, the consolidation of corporate power, and we're going to see those two entities fusing into each other. And the last thing I would say is the irony of all this is right now the left is celebrating the authority of the state. Left is celebrating the authority of the corporation's ability to control your speech. And they're literally celebrating the synthesis of these two forces that are largely going to be clearly turned against us, but also be turned against other capitalist powers in war. And it's just, it's again, the literally opposite of what you want a left to be doing right now. And I think it's just another disaster.
I will say that we have not talked about last week, or maybe we did say it briefly, but we did not talk about much about, we have to acknowledge though, that had it been BLM, Black Lives Matter protesters, they would have been treated differently. I think it's very important to acknowledge that, because the National Guard was immediately called when Black Lives Matter protesters were out there and Trump was over there having a photo out in front of that church and the Bible and stuff. And they were attacked brutally. And if they really wanted to, they would have called for the National Guard and asked for a lot more troops or support from national security. And Black Lives Matter protesters didn't get that same level of treatment as these protesters did.
Yeah, I mean, the BLM demonstrations were around this country, millions of people, and tens of thousands of National Guard and police were mobilized to crack down on it. So it's not like the state isn't able to bring force to bear to attempt to control not just 5,000 people, but, you know, several million people. So the difference for me just as much exposes the fraud of this moment, because there's no way 4,000 people, and it wasn't all 4,000. It was just like, it was a section of the 4,000. There's no way they get into the Capitol. There's no way. If BLM had been walking on the Capitol and posed itself as an actual threat, saying, no, we're going to actually take this place down, because let's remember the Capitol is, I think these things were built by slaves. If you're going to take down statues, might as well take down the Capitol, right? If you're going to take down the legacy of slavery, that's what this thing is ultimately. Then what do you think that would have happened if a 200,000 strong demonstration was there looking to take down the Capitol? Well, I think the U.S. would have marshaled the forces to deal with it. It would have been an actual street battle, but you know, that's ultimately why our movement can't just rely on 200,000, why it needs to be within the working class, and why our movement needs to be armed. I mean, and why we can't let the government take the guns away from us, because eventually this is what's going to have to happen anyway.
And I think that also when we make those, like, you know, look at what they're, it's like, I feel like we're talking to a parent, like, and that's unfair, you know, like, you hit us, you gotta hit them, you know. And I think, I feel like that's a bit like infantile almost, because I mean, of course, you know, there is racism, you know, the repressive apparatus is inherently racist, you know, because capitalism has to be racist. And Yeah. So again, I mean, but also when we talk about like white protests and stuff, there's usually guns around. You know, that's another reason why they don't clamp down on them the way they do on you know, like the people advocating for gun control. You know, because they are armed. You know, we talked about like that militia in Atlanta, the not fucking around militia. They didn't fuck with them. You know, and again, that's what again what we talk about. We're gonna have to have a way to respond to their repressiveness. Because that is a fact. They are going to persecute you. This is not new. You know, like if you try to change a system, they will clamp down on you. They will persecute you. And, you know, and yes, that's what they're claiming they're doing. And by and large, the left, you know, Sean King is persecuting people. Sean King is hunting people down. Sean King is advocating for the police. Sean King suddenly is, you know, if he was supporting BLM, suddenly, he's an advocate for the state. Sean King is an operative. He's an agent of the state at this point. You know, he's doing the job of the state. You know, that is dangerous as hell. And again, but we get in this like very simplistic, oh, they're white, we're black. And of course it plays into it, but we got to see the nuance that's going on. But again, it plays that way because that's what they want you to think. You know, literally, like us just excusing everything through race. And so we keep bickering about it. When in reality, we should be looking at what they, you know, these people are trying to do. If in reality, you know, they were free agents, you know, they were trying to you know, get into the house of power. You know, and we have to find some value in that. You know, and if anything, we should be like, you know, what they're doing to them, that's coming after us. Mm-hmm. That's a warning for us.
Yeah, I think this is where I would say that they would come after us as well through with their partnership with Silicon Valley. I think this is where we can segue into now.
Yeah,
sort of is the censorship that has been going on, which is a form of going after us, because once they go after the right, they go after the left. Now, I want to just quickly say I have been conflicted of this because from the beginning of this, of what's left, I remember we did, I think, Roseanne Barr, was it, Andy? And I said then, I really don't care much for Roseanne Barr, so it doesn't really have any, like, I'm not really, I mean, I see your point, Andy, but it's not that, I'm not that concerned over Roseanne Barr. She can be deplatformed or whatever. And you said if they go after Roseanne Barr, they're going to start censoring, no? And I said, well, yeah. I just don't think Alex Jones deserves a platform. I also said that. And that's why this running inside joke, if anybody is a cult following a listener of What's Left, I usually say your friend Alex Jones, right, Andy? Because I know you have differences with Alex Jones. But the point by saying that is that we went back to that joke, that inside joke is back from that episode from when I used to say, I just don't think Alex Jones deserves a platform. And you were making the case then that no one should be deplatformed because that'll just call for, that's, you know, the banning of everything. So it was after that vaccine, as I've said before, episode, Operation Warp Speed, that made it very difficult to find anything to have a balanced, not balanced view, but have a more both side kind of understanding of this of vaccine. And then I'm not an anti-vaxxer per se. That really struck something inside of me. So I do think now that as Glenn Greenwald continuously is tweeting, that we need to be very cauteloso, super cautious of what is happening because they are coming after the left. And the Democrats have just been rewarded by Silicon Valley recently. We are the movement of non-censorship and not banning books, I think, right? I mean, if we go back to Berkeley in the 60s, the free speech movement was started by the left. Mm-hmm. I think, or yeah. And here we are rejoicing, because I see it in my feed. Everyone's rejoicing that they're just being banned. All of these Trump supporters are being banned. And I shared something and even got a reaction from a few people, because people sort of just looked at it and, oh, they don't want to respond. So they just, I'm sure they swipe up. And they really do think that Trump needs to be banned. They think that Trump supporters need to be banned. But I've been really honing in. I've been sharing with you articles and watching these YouTube videos on Glenn Greenwald. And I think I'm becoming his follower now. And he's really saying it's pretty clear that that they're going to come after us. If Apple and Google are controlling what we can say and what can we not say, then anytime there is, as you two are going to really for revolutionary cause, I don't think anything could be done. I don't think anything could be initiated to transform the system. Oh, no, I would like to say, look at what's happening to Julian Assange right now, right? We did an episode on Julian Assange. Look at what's happening to him.
There's also people that are, you know, supporting him getting arrested on the basis of breaking COVID, laws. That again, like, shows the context, you know, where we're heading.
I mean, and he is allotted by the left, and look at what they're doing. Well, you know what I mean, not by the Democrats.
Yeah, but he was when he was opposing the Iraq war, but when he starts posing liberal about and Democratic yeah. Party ugliness, then they go after him.
And
yeah,
another thing maybe that I wanted to bring up is that we are supposed to be about facts and things like that, right? And you know, like, do people know what exactly Trump said, the tweets that he was banned for, you know? And then they claim that he was inciting violence and this and that, and they had nothing to do with that. He was talking about, you know, advocating for the 75 million people that voted for him.
Yep.
And that he would not show up to the inauguration. And then Twitter came out and said, you know, he's inciting violence, he needs to be banned. And again, you know, if we're looking at facts, you know, that sets a very interesting precedent, you know, that they basically can just, the censors, in this case, you know, Twitter, can, they determine what's valid, you know, what knowledge is valid and what is not. And they can determine what is violent and what is not. You know, and I don't know. I don't know if people don't see that, how dangerous that could be. I don't know what to tell them.
Yeah. And I mean, it is really, again, another shameful part of the left. There are revolutionaries who are actually supporting Twitter's ban of Trump. Yeah. Revolutionary organizations, revolutionary socialist organizations supporting that, which to me is criminal, to be supporting these massive corporations far more powerful than Trump that are going to be used against, that not just are, but are currently and have historically been used against the working class here and are going to be part of the attack on the working class going into the future. I think the thing I would say is, I think it's important to also talk about not just Trump's feed getting taken down, but Parler, which is being talked about. It's being talked about as a right-wing center. I think it was actually started by libertarians. It's like, it's a free speech kind of thing. They don't let you aggregate the data. They don't let advertisers aggregate your data on Parler. That's a big thing. And it's gotten big. And right-wingers have gone there as they've been deplatformed off of YouTube and other and Twitter and things like that. So it has been a place for people who have conservative ideas, kind of like the people who we invited on our show 2 weeks ago. And I do agree that we have to understand that if they can go after the right like this, or if they can go after conservatives like this, and I would even say if they can go after Nazis like this, because this is the other thing that's going to be marshaled in what we can talk about later, then this will be used against left voices and extreme left voices who are fighting for a different kind of cause. But I also want to say, so I do think that this censorship is not really an attack on Trump. It's an attack on workers, an attack on our class, and it previews an the willingness of the state and the corporations to essentially have a monopoly on lying. They want to be able to monopolize the lying space of the media so that no one else can tell you anything. No one else can tell you a different lie, and no one else can certainly tell you the truth. But I also want to say that, because I was talking with Brian, who kind of was like, the right is not a threat. And I do agree that when the capitalist class has to consider that they're separating the wealth higher and higher up to the top, they know their history. They know that that creates an unstable situation that has produced revolutions in other countries and in other eras. They are worried about that. They are worried about workers making a revolution in this country, given their plan to separate the wealth from the workers and push it even more up and concentrate it more up into the top of the capitalist society here in this country. So I do know they worry about revolution. And the revolution I think they most worry about is the one we saw in the Russian Revolution, a working class revolution. That is what keeps them up at night at the end of the day. So all these things are ultimately, in my mind, if you think about it, to stop that moment from happening ever again here in the United States or anywhere around the globe. But it isn't just fighting the right as a head fake, which is going to be directed against the left. Let's remember, what are some of the right-wing ideas? The fact that this was a fraudulent election, that's supposedly a right-wing idea. I actually agree with it. The fact that COVID is like the flu and is being overestimated as a threat in order to produce that, I agree with that, and that's a right-wing idea that you're not allowed to say. The fact that masks don't work or actually can harm you, that's a right-wing idea. I actually agree with that, all right? The fact that lockdown is really martial law and is part of a plandemic, I think there's really reason to believe that, and it's part of bringing the economy down. That currently is a right-wing idea. It's not the left saying that, that's the right. They don't want people saying that. The idea that vaccines are an experiment on humans, on the US population and the global population, actually targeting black and brown. Also right-wing, seemingly a right-wing idea, even though there are leftists who say a little bit of it, but that's not coming from the left. That's actually true, I believe. And they're going after anybody saying that. The idea that there's a great reset going on, that's a conspiracy, that's QAnon, let's shut that down. The idea that the fourth industrial revolution might actually be behind what's taking place here, that's another conspiracy, let's take that down. So there are ideas out there that the ruling class is trying to decapitate. The shame is that the left isn't bothering with any of those ideas. Like, to the extent that I've said them, I'm being called a right winger because I'm saying some of those things. I'm a Marxist. I want a working class revolution. But I actually do believe there's a fourth industrial revolution that's actually coming and a great reset. And I do believe COVID is essentially a plandemic to establish a martial law in order so the capitalists here can accumulate power so they can compete with China, who is doing the same thing to their working class over there. That's what I believe. All right. And I believe the only way of stopping that is a working class revolution. And that's the last thing that they want to shove out the window, which is the idea that a revolution should even be on the table. Because let's talk, what does insurrection mean? Mm-hmm. Insurrection means revolution, dude. That's what it means. So they're basically saying, forget about it. We're going to separate the wealth even more. And we need to take that word revolution off the table. We're going to terrify you to believing you're going to be identified, and we're going to go after you if you think about it. But we're also going to make sure that no one even thinks it's even on the table as an idea, because anybody who talks like that is a conspiracy kook. Mm-hmm. Right. And of course that's an attack on the left, but they're going to go after the right, because it's really right now only the right talking about that. It's only the right that's even talking about challenging the state. The left right now is basically thanking Operation Warp Speed for giving us the vaccine. Everyone's lining up for it.
And I also think that to a big degree, the left is part of the persecution of, you know, doing the dirty job. You know, like, for example, on the left, it's very widely accepted that if you say you're a conspiracy theorist, you're discounted. You know, the conspiracy theories, or if you question science, you know, even though they're pseudoscience, they're pseudo-statistics of COVID, if you question them, then you're seen with suspicion, right? And now, again, that's why I'm really concerned, because they're persecuting people, hunting people down. You know, the people with big social media platforms like Sean King, you know, and in apologizing for, you know, for people like Biden and Kamala. And so, yeah, I mean, that's why I don't know. Like, I feel too that I, at the moment, I have more in common with the right wing than the left, you know, because of these things, you know, and not to mention gun control, taxes, you know, and, you know, like individual freedom too, you know, like, because so it is deeply concerning that I do have this notion that, you know, the left and the liberal left is the fastest vehicle to this techno-fascist world that, you know, we've been talking with Alison McDowell here. In, you know, no questions asked. And again, and not only are we celebrating the people we should be wary of, but we're advocating for them to do it to us, you know, to bring down the hammer on us, to save us, you know, and that's the craziest part, you know, and it brings me back to this notion that, you know, reformism opens the doors to fascism, and you know, that phrase just keeps hunting in, you know, in my head, and like I'm seeing it unfold in front of me.
I have said before that, you know, I love the 60s. I always think of the 60s as the Renaissance period of, people say the Renaissance started here of the 60s, but when I was in England traveling, people would always say, yeah, sure, the US Americans would say that, but it actually started in Britain. That's what they tell me. Mm. Anyhow, so wherever it started, the hippie era in Mexico or in Britain or in the USA, there was value in conspiracies. It was very much something that was, I've said this, that was valued, you know. People thought the government is trying to inject us with things. There's stuff that's happening in the government that it's secretive. And there was a lot of secrets that were revealed. And that have been, and the hippie era, whatever you named yourself at that time, you know, that time, which really, I should say, I learned this fact quickly, because I listened to Letters in Politics and so on KPFA, that was the first time that the teenager was seen as a teenager. Before the 1950s, the teenager was seen as a young adult that was going to transition into sort of living the life of the white picketed fence and moving into the US American life. And the Industrialized Revolution really caused that childhood to end. But the hippie era brought that teenage self-love and all that to light, and which now persists today. We think of the teenager that is defiant and rebellious and all that spirit, metal rocker, whatever. And so let's go back to that. So these conspiracies, whether it was astrology, whether it was anti-vaccine, whether it was going back to the land because your food was being poisoned by, you know, stuff that they were putting in by the government or whatever. And now, as you two have now said, it is a lot of these conspiracies are now being co-opted by the right, or even as simple as me having a conversation about reopening schools with someone today. Suddenly I'm, what are you becoming, Eduardo? You are now aligning yourself with the right. I don't ever think that reopening schools is part of the right. Reopening schools, they're reopening schools in my country of Mexico, they're reopening schools in France, they're reopening schools in Britain. And I had to fight hard and almost claim back that I'm part of the left, you know? It is. So there is something that is happening. There's a shift of the left that is being dismissive and also adopting the government as part of their team, or their whatever they're doing. I don't know, it's working, but they're aligning themselves. We were the movement of anti-government and Big Brother. Now it's scary. It is very scary. Now we think anything that is not factual, as I think Kenny said right now, it's now dismissed. Yeah.
But I do think that to a degree, like, the left that I know in my lifetime, you know, like, okay, the Democratic Party, they've always advocated for the state intrusion in your life. And the right wing has talked shit about that, and we haven't listened. But, you know, because what did Obama do with the healthcare mandate? Punish you because you didn't have healthcare, you know, when you do your taxes? You know, instead of, you know, actually finding a solution for that. So punishing you because you don't have healthcare. You know, to nudge you, sugar taxes, cigarette taxes, all these taxes, you know, that, you know, the people of things that people use to cope with this shitty life that we have. You know, Eric Garner, I think in New York, right? He died from, you know, selling loose cigarettes in New York.
Yeah.
You know, and so again, like, I think the left has been in that game in my lifetime. You know, trying to nudge you, socially engineer you, you know, like, and now they're taking it up to another level where, you know, they're literally going into your body to socially engineer you, into your brain to socially engineer you. And so I'd be really weary, you know, and again, yes, the right wing, you know, like the Fox News, they've hijacked the language that we're supposed to be using. You know, like, I almost feel like I'm listening to, like, you know, people that I would expect to listen, you know, on the radical left, you know, talking about class struggle, the rich and the poor, that racism is a tool to divide us. But no, it's those white people that just want to cover their privilege. We dismiss that. We, I think, people of color that push identity politics, we're insulting our own intellect by accepting that bullshit. You know, and here we are, just being childish on the left, talking about privilege. You know, we don't really have economic understanding, you know, of how things move. And that's why, again, that's why I'm a Marxist. That's why I think people would benefit from diving into Marxism and having a different approach of understanding things. I think things will make more sense than they do now. Because by and large, on the left, we're talking about feelings and little logic. And what we're doing is very counterproductive, counter-revolutionary. You know, in very fascist.
There's some more thinking I'm going to have to do about our tradition, the socialist tradition, because, I mean, my own involvement in the ISO, I'd found that authoritarian streak. But I agree with you, Eduardo, that, I mean, Kenny, that has been my experience within the left. Largely the left and the revolutionary left and the socialist left that I was a part of, and I actually, in my time, contributed to this. Had a cancel culture to it, had a notion of we all have to think the same. And if we all think the same, then that collectivity meant thinking the same, you know, because we knew it was a collective struggle. So I guess we all have to be thinking the same so we can all make that collective struggle. And I actually think I do believe that's in opposition to the Marxist notion of the collective nature of the working class and the idea that the liberation of any individual could not be found except for the socialist transformation of society through a working class revolution. That is not supposed to mean pegging everyone down into the same cubbyhole, but actually an expansion and a growth and a multiplicity of expression and things like that. Not just art, but actually whatever people feel. So that I believe is the tradition in which Marxism is rooted, in that notion of collective struggle. But that is not the socialism that I come from. And it gets into that question I think Eduardo has of why workers talk about the worker state. It's why I think Eduardo kind of goes, wait, that worker state, because this seems like it's going to control me. And I get that, because that's been kind of the tradition in some ways when you look at socialism in China or Cuba or North Korea, you know.
And I haven't had that episode yet on my.
I know, sorry, you know, but
yeah,
but I do think so. I think there's something to be figured out and discussed there. I think there is a history in the Russian Revolution that I do think shows the liberatory elements of that started to get eroded much earlier than 1924 when Stalin comes to power, but were there after the revolution. So that's into a deeper discussion. And in some ways it gets it, I think, for people like your friend, Eduardo Jake. You know, Jake knows that he wants the individual, but the individual freedoms, and always comes back to that notion that somehow those individuals have to collect together, and he's right. And then I think socialists have to figure out that same thing of, like, how is it that individuals come together as a collective, and how does that find expression in liberating us as opposed to just enslaving us in something different? And I think, I think there's something to be figured out there in the that's going to be different than what socialist revolutions have led to in Nicaragua, Cuba, China, and then what Russia became. We'll have to, otherwise the revolution will not be successful.
I mean, for me, it's, you know, the working class has to be always and they're ready to go to war with the state, any state. But, you know, we can have another discussion about it. But, I agree. I mean, these are things that we need to wrestle with and actually have an answer. And if he hasn't been answering in the past, we're going to have to answer it ourselves. You know, that's the other thing. Yes, history has happened, but, you know, like, I think Rosa Luxemburg was the one who said that we do what we can with the tools that we have. And, you know, if there were failures, you know, I still want to give it a shot, you know, like, and try to figure something new out if it hasn't been answered.
I think this is all right.
Yeah. I suspect, Eduardo, you're going to probably want to remove some of the things I said because you're going to think that our channel is going to get canceled if I give that whole long list of things. You're going to want to edit all that. Otherwise, our channel is going to be removed.
You're going to want to leave it. I expect at some point our channel is going to be compromised. I just know it.
I suspect the same thing. I actually believe the same thing. Yeah.
So I think we need to enjoy this for the moment. We'll just have to do another channel again and get back on it and just keep going. So whoever has gotten to this far, you should look, find, I keep repeating, so many times the blog, because you can find us. If you really want to stick with us and you've been through this journey with us, remember that blog. I always remind people at the very beginning of the intro. There's a reason why we put it in the beginning.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want this to be in the show. You can keep it if you want, but who knows? Maybe we'll be calling ourselves What's Right.
That's me. I don't think so.
We're keeping that.
I mean, you know, like, if you're sincere, like, with your political process, I think you have to ask these tough questions and, you know, what the hell does it mean? You know, like you said, Eduardo, things are upside down, it seems. You know, like, the left is doing the right thing, you know, what the right is supposed to do, and the right is doing certain things, but, you know, there's also, like, members that are racist. But I'm like, well, the left is also fucking hypocrites because they're just, you know, hidden racist and they don't know they're being racist. And I don't know, it is hard. And I think that's kind of the point, you know, in a way, to make it confusing. That's why I suspect the right has kind of hijacked the right, like the establishment, right? Or the like the talking heads have hijacked a lot of the language that we should be using.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on. I'm trying to articulate, really pinpoint what is going on in this country. And I think it has to do with being in Trump land. It just has to be with being in Trump land. I think that's what really caused people to do camps. I think, I'm not sure. But like I said, it's fresh. I talked about reopening schools with my former colleague, and immediately it was, you know, jump to, what are you doing? What are you saying? And the minute I start saying, you know, in France, because I did have this conversation with my friend who's a parent in France, they don't have this. It's other Trump. It's both the right and the left agree. It's logical. Open schools. We need to have our kids back. And so they're doing it, and they have practical measures for it. They're doing it in Spain. They're doing it in Britain. They're doing it in Mexico. They had the conversations going way back last year. But why is this country, you in San Francisco, you can't have the schools open? So again, going back to this, I don't know what is it about the left that is just any conversation around something, it's triggering. It's very triggering. I don't know. There's a lot of faith recently in science, but science that's being misconstrued to used by the, I don't know, we've been around this now, so I think we've said our words, right?
Yeah.
I wanted to just quickly say, Julian Assange is welcome to come to Mexico. You know, AMLO has opened the door, and asylum can be given. Again, giving asylum to Bolivia, giving asylum to Fidel Castro, giving, or not asylum, but Fidel Castro worked there.
Well, then, but what did AMLO say with regards to Trump and the censorship? He said, censorship is the job of the state. That was what he said. You know, this is your social in Mexico.
Interesting.
He said, censorship is the job of the state, not private corporations.
Well, and it is an interesting trick that's been pulled off by the U.S. ruling class to essentially, in the same way that they offloaded their military into these private armies, now they've offloaded political power of controlling expression into these private companies so that they can't actually be voted or elected on, you know? So it's a very interesting trick they've pulled.
And maybe this is another topic that we haven't really discussed. Why try to go after Facebook, you know, in public? You know, is this again another show of, you know?
But you mean in terms of antitrust?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, I don't think, I still would say that this is not going to be, well, this is not going to be solved by just breaking the monopolies up. I don't think it's the direction things are moving, but it won't be solved by antitrust any more than it did back in Teddy Roosevelt's day, breaking the monopolies up prior to World War I. That worked well. You know, so it's not, capitalism moves towards monopoly. And at the same time, it has national tensions that lead towards war. So that's, we're going to see that pressure as a capital accumulates within each of these national centers. Even though they have multinational corporations that run around, those multinational corporations have home countries that they rely on. So when China wants to get into Africa, I can guarantee you they're going to be relying on the Chinese state to open up some borders in Africa if Africa doesn't just let them in. That's the way it is.
I think that people quickly should look into the debate that was held by Democracy Now! With Chris Hedges. That was a good debate, and Chris Hedges doesn't agree with the censoring that is happening. People should follow Glenn Greenwald. I think if anyone wants to continue this conversation or look more into it, they should really see some of these folks. Yeah. It's pretty good stuff. I shared some stuff with you all over email, and yeah. So.
Chris Hedges is someone that I listen to a lot. You know, I agree with him a lot. On the vote issue, you know, he didn't vote for Biden and Kamala and many things. He's one of those, like, things, people on the left that it's kind of a beacon of hope for me, at least. Because everyone else, you know, Cornel West, Angela Davis, all these, you know, people that we know, they're committed to the Democratic project.
And I do want to highlight one thing, because Kenny, I want to go off of that one thing you said, which I think you thought was a joke of whether what's left is eventually going to be called what's right or something like that. But I do think we should acknowledge with our audience, because we've talked about it here, how we've invited Jake and Rob to return to our show, and like they're going to potentially produce some questions for us as people who identify as being conservative. What are questions they would have for people who are left on the left, as all of us here identify? But that show itself is part, for me at least, of a longer term project of seeing if people who identify as conservatives and those of us who don't and who are more on the left, and some of us revolutionary, some of us not, see how do we, is there areas of engagement we can have, and is there area of movement that could be constructive? So that is something that I think is a question I have for the movement in general. Could it do that? I think we're going to maybe experiment with that here.
Yeah. All right. I think so. I mean, a lot of people voted for Trump, and I spoke to one of our former guests here on What's Left, Natalie Risi, who is a socialist and also part of the PSL, Party for Socialism and Liberation, I think it is. And she said something very interesting. She said, a lot of people voted for Trump. We cannot discount or discard them at all. Mm-hmm. We have to try to work with some of them. Mm-hmm. If we look at back in history from Welsh miners who worked with an LGBT organization or movement, a lot of the the stigma around, you know, homophobia and all of that, those barriers had to be overcome in order to unite and work together. And so we were talking about that, she and I. Anyhow, the point is, this is part of the reason why I think that we shouldn't dismiss folks like Jake or Rob or folks, you know, whoever. I do think that we need to unite as the working class. Yeah.
Although your favorite guest, AJ, did say that she was like, she squirmed sometimes as we were doing that interview. She was like, so she wasn't, that wasn't her most favorite episode. It certainly wasn't Brandy's favorite episode.
Yeah.
So I know that our audience does not appreciate the way we're going, yeah, but this is what we're doing.
Well, AJ is...
We don't censor people.
Well, as much as AJ disagrees with me, mostly agrees with both of you, but disagrees with me, and I have a very, I have a little soft spot for her. She should come on here and she should state what she has to say, because she's invited here and she should come here and she can always say what she says, and she's got people who really like what she has to say.
And then we'll kick her off for later.
No. All right. Yeah, this is a good spot.
Yeah.
That does it for this week's episode. What's Left is a weekly political podcast as channel challenging the mainstream left. We post information about our topics and our guests on the episode notes, wherever you found this episode, or on our blog. Remember that blog, write it down. We might be canceled one day. We might be deplatformed. So write this blog down. what-s-left.webno.com. You can find past episodes to this podcast / channel there and connect with us. I remind folks, if you like anything you have heard here, please share your favorite episode, rate, review, subscribe, turn on your notifications to any of our 6 platforms on Spotify, iTunes Podcast, Stitcher, Google Play, BitChute, or YouTube. And if you would like to give us feedback about something you've heard or suggest something for us to cover, contact us through our blog. I'm Eduardo Barca with co-host Kenny Cepeda and Annie Lipson. Take care.